This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 233, Back in the Saddle. Welcome again. It's been a while to GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm one of your co-hosts, co-founders, and co-crazies for this show, and I'm glad to be back again in the saddle with my good friend, my co-everything, Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael. It's Michael. And just a 30-second PSA. We had some technical difficulties last week and lost network connectivity right as we started recording and literally ran out of time. Yeah. So sorry we're a week late from when we said we'd be back, but we're back, baby. We're back.
Yeah, well, and you know, the song Burning Down the House kind of sprung to mind, which is kind of a bad thing to think of, but we're starting with some news that is a little bit old, but it's still relevant, and it's still right in the midst of all the things, and that was what happened in Paris just not that long ago, last month in April, and what happened at the same time in Second Life. So this is one of the ones you found, Michael, and I thought it was really incredible.
Yeah, one of the great things about Second Life, and you and I did a lot of work in it, gosh, can you believe it, 12 years ago, I think it is now? And is the recreation of a lot of physical space. And while there was talk about, you know, work that had been done with laser scanners for the Assassin's Creed game, you know, scanning in Notre Dame for part of the game and how they made that location available, which I believe was an add-on pack, but they made it free after the horrible events at Notre Dame. The Second Life had a recreation of Notre Dame that's been around for a long time. And actually, what's really interesting is this spontaneous crowd of people going to the recreation just to experience it and remember and kind of mourn with the tragedy at Notre Dame. And it's, you know, one of the fantastic thing about virtual environments and virtual worlds and virtual reality is the fact that you can, you know, experience things, quote, in person, even if you're not physically there. And I think that was, you know, part of the grief that people were outpouring to just go and experience what they remember about Notre Dame, and very, very powerful, very interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I was just taking a quick peek at the teleport link as well, and it's kind of amazing that you can be somewhere instantaneously this way. And when you overlay the real world on top of a virtual world, on top of a whole range of real life events happening simultaneously, pretty incredible. The Assassin's Creed conversation was also intriguing because there were some thoughts about whether or not that model might be useful in the rebuilding of the cathedral and more. And the short answer to that was, well, no, they're not actually using it for that purpose. But some of these environments are really that real. And when you're able to bring in the sounds, you're able to bring in the visuals, changing where the sun might be at a particular time of day, all kinds of intriguing things can happen. So sad time for our friends in France. And I'm glad that from what I've read about the event with the fire and so on, that many and very important elements of the cathedral have been spared. The organ was spared, the bells were spared, but it'll take quite some time to get everything back and running.
Yep.
Now, if you had a magic wand and you could just like fix it all and levitate bells up where they needed to go, that would kind of be a good thing to do, wouldn't it?
Actually, if I had a magic wand, I would go out and play Harry Potter Wizards Unite.
No. I thought you might. Which is your phone, actually, in terms of magic wand action?
Yeah,
so if you live in Australia, New Zealand, you could.
Yeah, and that was, you know, another one of the links that we found over the last couple of weeks, that there was the game launched, right? But only in two locations. And I haven't seen a follow-up story yet to see if it's launched anywhere else yet. But this is one of those games that, you know, it's going to consume a lot of hours once it comes out. I'm a big Harry Potter fan. I know you like Harry Potter, too. And yep. It's the whole AR aspects, leveraging a lot of the gameplay and capabilities that were rolled out with what was the original game? Ingress, right?
Yep.
With Pokemon Go and you know, a game that I'm playing right now in my copious free time, the Ghostbusters game, which is almost the exact same game. But this is going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to how they expand not only the universe, but the gameplay based off of, you know, actually waving your, I'm assuming it's your phone. Maybe it's actually your hand in front of your phone's camera to trace the spells out, right?
You know, you and I speculated on so many things that they could do.
And we're always wrong. Occasion.
Well, not always. Sometimes not always. We're only mildly wrong.
Not completely so, wrong. We could just be misconceived. We could be
mistaken. So I'm excited to see it when it comes out, too. And then we'll be able to get some more fun and more games wherever you might happen to be. It'll be intriguing to see it.
Yep.
So if you're in Australia and New Zealand and want to tell us a little bit about how and what you think about it, we'd love to hear.
Yeah, drop a comment to the show notes on this episode over at gamesatwork.biz.
Yes. Now, there is something that seems like it's available right away, and that is Snapchat. And that it has an AR capability too. It's called Scan. And actually, I didn't know really about this at all. I'm not a snapper, right? Do you snap?
I did for a little while. And the interesting thing that Snapchat did, right, was the whole face tracking, right? So uh-huh. You would turn on the camera, you would point at yourself, and you put dog ears or you know, the puking rainbows, etc. And then they added, you know, voice manipulation. So when you're talking, suddenly you're very robotic. So this is more interesting though, because you're really talking about adding content into the picture. And doing more with that, not just taking something that's there and adding on top of it, but actually looking at the world, not just the person. And some of the examples that they show are like, you know, having fireworks come out of the top of the Capitol, or, you know, turning a building into a pizza.
Well, one thing that I saw in here that reminded me of something else you'd found quite a while ago was this idea about photo math, right? So with Snap or Scan, you could take a picture of some math on a piece of paper, and it could compute the result for you, which kind of reminded me of, what was it, the Sudoku puzzle solver.
Yep.
Right?
Well, it's interesting. So the Sudoku one I really like, because it not only recognized the Sudoku board and the positioning of the existing numbers, but then solved the puzzle for you. I don't even remember the app. I'll have to try to see if I can find it for the show notes. But there's been an app that I had on my phone for a long time that allowed you to write mathematical equations, right? In longhand, if you want to call it that. And it would solve them for you.
So you could do it on a blackboard or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, basically, you know, you could do like a long division problem and say, you know, 42, and then a bracket with a line stretching across, then a number below it, right? You know, long division, and then it would actually solve the equation for you. You could also even do algebra to some degree. You know, you can do a quadratic, and it would solve that. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, related, but not exactly. to this, I heard on the radio this morning on NPR about a guy named Michael Martin, of all names, from Nike, who was developing an AR app to be able to help people get shoes that fit better. Because what people are doing now is they'll go to Zappos and they'll order their size, one up, one down, and then return the two that don't fit. And that's kind of wasteful, because while there might be free returns and all that stuff, you're shipping all these things all around. The user experience is not great. And it might even be that the shoe and the style that you're buying is not really appropriate for your foot in the first place. So there's an augmented reality angle of using your phone to, I guess, take a foot measurement and get more tightly dialed into what will fit you the best.
So yeah, this reminds us of the discussions again many years ago with My Virtual Model, right, where you'd try on clothing even the laser scan fitted jeans, but just extending up the shoes. And I know there's been some shoe stores, because I've gone to them, that do that with a physical, not the physical measuring, but you basically step on what looks like an iPad. And yep. It traces your foot and figures out, kind of how do you stand.
Yeah, Fleet Feet does that. Fleet Feet does that, and actually uses an iPad to collect the data from the scan it takes of your feet to look at your arch height and all kinds of other stuff.
And that's it, Fleet Feet, because that's where I usually go get my tennis shoes.
Ta-da! Intriguing. So it's intriguing, even more intriguing, that you might be able to use a phone to measure your feet, because I wouldn't have thought that. I mean, we've talked about some other measurement of clothing kind of apps.
Or glasses, too. Right? Figuring out face measurements.
Well, Warby Parker. Yeah, yep. I mean, that's right there, too. So your feet...
like your face.
Yeah.
As in, they're three-dimensional.
Measure your face.
And can be measured in pictures.
Well, so if you can do all this kind of stuff with your phone's camera, can you imagine all the other things that could be done with cameras that are watching you all the time?
Yeah, and so it's interesting. I had heard about this research project by Princeton called the Princeton IoT Inspector. And, we've talked about on the show, I've got this box in my house that monitors all my network activity on the house, right? Does the security scans, et cetera, the Fing box, and I also have the DNS spoofer, which is the Pi hole, that also provides a level of tracking reduction by killing almost every single ad except ones that are locally hosted by the site that actually runs them.
Right.
Also clears all kinds of bad other sites, malware sites, etc., by dumping those IP addresses into a Bitbucket. So I was really excited to see this article and then going over and look at the Princeton IoT Inspector. And so what this does is basically, similar to my Fing box, is you run it on one of your computers or a Raspberry Pi, which I guess is a computer also, and I have a couple of those, and it monitors all the IoT devices on your network, analyzes their traffic, and identifies kind of what they do. And potentially allows you to stop them from doing things they shouldn't do, because what you end up identifying in theory is, all the different tracking stuff that they're doing. What's the telemetry data that they're tracking? How often do they phone home? Blah, 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 right? So I was really excited to try this out. I set it up, installed it, and then ran it for a couple of days and noticed that none of my IoT devices were doing anything.
What?
And so after a little bit more digging around, the best I can tell was either my Fing box or my Pi hole were killing all their communications. And so the tool that was being used by the researchers at Princeton to track stuff was basically being blocked from doing what it wanted to do. And so I uninstalled it because I really like the features of my other two tools to keep my home network a little bit more safe, it's secure, and anonymous.
So we have to talk about the Thing Box, too, at some point, because that's something I need to learn a little bit more about. But I'm going to give this a try because I've got a fair number of IoT devices in my home.
You have more than you realize.
I was looking on my router recently. I was like, oh, you've got 16, 18 connections. I'm like, whoa, that's a lot. Then I start looking at the list. I was like, oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the interesting thing about the Fing. So F-I-N-G. This was a Kickstarter Fing. I backed a couple of years ago. And they have a software-only solution, but I wanted the hardware device on my network. Not only does it track and help you identify all the stuff going on your network, but it also identifies drive-bys. And what do I mean by that?
Somebody is just with their phone, like,
trying to connect to my network. Or just identifying that my network exists.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the number of IP6 addresses that are scanning all the time in the neighborhood is amazing. Oh, it's gotta be
huge.
And so I actually hide the SSID of my network, so it shouldn't be found as easily, but it is still amazing how much drive-by traffic there is. And I'm not living in a 25-story apartment complex in the middle of a major city.
All right, so we've been talking about hardware here, and we've been talking about networks, and there's something like, you know, super intriguing here that would probably do a drive-by for you too, and that would be a delivery robot from, I'm thinking about Starship, I'm thinking about Jefferson Starship, but
I'm thinking Starship Enterprise.
That might be there too. Although it doesn't look like much of a Starship Enterprise.
Doesn't look like Jefferson Starship either.
Doesn't look like Jefferson, yeah. But wouldn't that be cool? Maybe ELO? That could be nice. This little robot has a 4-mile radius to go and deliver packages.
Yes.
And it's being used right now at some universities that are doing this, or who's using it so far?
Yeah, so this is, and I can't remember why I found this one. But there's a couple of universities using a trial of this Starship robot for on-campus deliveries for food. And I want to say it was in Virginia, but I just thought it was really cool. It was kind of interesting. It's I think it started off as not even a Kickstarter, but, you know, guys hacking around together at school. And basically what got me excited about this is how these robots are actually improving driving models. If you think about a delivery robot going across campus.
Yeah.
Campus is insane when it comes to, you know, bikers, skateboarders, people walking, playing with dogs, you know, buses going on the road, blah, 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 right? And so understanding the best path, as well as reacting to random things jumping in front of you, is amazing. And like I said, I can't remember where I found out about these guys, but it just looked like a really interesting set of technology that they're using, and I was thinking it'd be kind of cool and we'll talk about this later, but at Moogfest a couple of weeks back, and just think of a downtown area with a lot of food deliveries. This would be perfect.
Yeah. I think it would be. I'm just taking a look at their website and everything, and it's pretty incredible. It's a small, compact unit. And gosh, with the delivery range that it has, you could just send all kinds of things. You could bring books. You could bring meals. That's great stuff. I love it.
Yeah. And actually, it looks like they're out in San Francisco area.
They are, but they've been in the UK.
Dusseldorf. In
Northern Arizona. Yeah. Been a bunch of different campuses.
Yeah.
All right. So getting from one level of robotics and interaction with people, there's another one that I thought was also really pretty incredible, and this is an ability to turn sign language into audible speech, which is like, whoa, how talk about a, you know, babblefish translation kind of thing. It's a glove you wear, and by signing, as you might, then making what people are signing audible to those that have hearing in the presence sounds like an interesting idea. And that's another one that you found.
Yeah, I actually came across this one. I think it was on my Facebook feed of all places, which usually doesn't have good stuff. It's usually everybody yelling about politics at each other. but this one really is about an engineering effort that was going on in Kenya to literally take sign language, as you say, and convert it into spoken word, which, you know, I thought about it a couple of different ways, and I guess just with everything going on lately and some of the articles I've been reading, matter of fact, I'm reading a book right now called Machine Platform Crowd.
Funny, me too. How about that? What Eric Brynjolfsson's on that, and yeah. Reading the two.
Yep. And really, really good book on that one. And they're talking about, you know, machine learning and et cetera, et cetera. But what got me excited about this one was I don't do sign language. I can do the alphabet, and I'm proficient with the alphabet, but I don't know the language itself, right? And so it's a great way to listen to what someone might be saying.
That's pretty cool.
And
that's pretty cool. And it's a multiple hopper, actually. So from the way it looks is that you wear the gloves yep. has sensors, then it gets transmitted via Bluetooth to a phone to create the text. And then there's a text to speech facility from the phone to read what was done.
Yeah. So, oh, speaking of which, if you watch the Microsoft Build keynote,
yeah.
Tying it back to the book and to this is going to be magical now. In 2015 or 2016, Microsoft Natural Language Processing was going through a lot of work, and there's actually a section in the book talking about how machine learning works, and by reducing the number of linguists on the team.
Yeah, you actually.
It got better and better and better to the point where they had zero linguists. So, in the Microsoft
every
build,
every time they fired a linguist, I think this was the phrase. Yeah. Right? Every time I fired a linguist,
the language improved,
machine learning understanding improved.
Exactly. But the reason I'm tying it to that is at the Microsoft Build conference, they were showcasing how they had a real time transcription capability.
Yes.
That. You needed three microphones, basically, and they basically had two people put their cell phones on a table, and they had an iPad in the center of the table. And think of this as a regular meeting, right? And because of those three microphones, they were able to basically dynamically create a microphone array, which gave you directional sound capability, which allowed them to then identify the individual speakers. And because of the radical improvement in natural language processing over the last few years, they were not only able to identify the speaker, parse the sentence correctly, but also understand the nuanced of different language domains, right? So medical domain language, which I know is an easy one because that was one of the first language translation stuff that or voice dictation back in the 1990s with Via Voice. But also, you know, business speak, etc. And I was actually watching the guy talking about Kubernetes. And it's funny, I was watching a video recently, and the language translation for closed captioning would change Kubernetes to communities every time.
That's pretty funny.
But this was just fantastic. So you can imagine, because of the ability to take the sign language and convert that into words, which became text, which then could be translated into spoken language, you could have them engage in that same conversation and all of that be dictated together. And then on top of that, you have the ability now that these systems can do real-time translation. So now you can have translation across multiple different communication methods, sign, spoken, different languages, etc., doing dynamic real-time translation. And we are at the point that I think, you know, the universal translator's here. It's just not evenly distributed yet. It's coming.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, I still wanted my braggy headset. I never actually jumped on it to buy them. And interestingly enough, the braggy company is moving away from the hardware.
Yep.
And they were the ones who had the translation as a service so that your earbud would dynamically be able to hear, listen, take into speech to text, translate, and then do text to speech again in your ear. Like, yeah, all in the same quick method.
Yeah, yeah. This is amazing. And again, going back to the engineering that was done for this very specific project, this is not, you know, designing new $20,000 gloves.
No.
Right? This is fairly inexpensive technology that can be made available to the masses. We are there.
That's really interesting, and I hadn't thought about the American Sign Language then to French, as a translation kind of capability.
Exactly.
That makes 100% sense from what you're describing. Whew. Okay.
Good times.
Wow. We have so many good things to talk about that we've been building up here for, a whole month, because that's where we've been. Jack Daniels. We've seen examples of this kind of marketing and advertising now in a couple of different places, where what they've done is they have an AR app that allows the bottle itself to create an experience right there in front of you. And I've seen this on wine. I've seen this on a couple of other consumer
beer
products.
Bottles too. Yeah.
Yes. So that was pretty cool to be able to have that kind of an experience, just pop it right there in front of you when you're out to buy. And of course that attracts your attention and makes the product stickier, and you want to show your friends, and maybe you're going to buy more. Right. Yep.
Yeah. I saw this one. I thought it was cool. I don't do bourbon. Not one of my
more
drinks.
Of a tequila guy, right?
Definitely not. More of a vodka guy. You get your whiskey drink, you get your vodka drink. You get your lager drink, you get... Never mind. do you know that song?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
Cider drink.
Just check it. But I thought this was a really good example, again, of that same leveraging AR to improve and engage the brand better. And kind of the history of Jack Daniels is an interesting history, since the people who live in the county where Jack Daniels is made cannot buy Jack Daniels legally in that county. It's a dry county. Did you know that?
So what? They have to give it away for free?
It's a dry county. That's all I'm saying.
Aha. Got it. All right, so continuing on the advertising theme, this is one of the things that I saw in Adweek. I love that particular magazine. There's always intriguing things. And this particular article was talking about experiential advertising. So instead of just print or TV or radio or even AR, this particular article was focused on what has been done to take advertising to a full experience level. So one of the examples was the construction of an entire Westworld campus. And this was done around the Austin South by Southwest event. And in order to experience this particular thing, you got on a bus and they took you out of town and into the desert, I guess, where they built up a Westworld experience, just like you would see from the TV show, hired actors, built sets, and you would be engaged and involved in Westworld with people who are acting as they were in the show, with all kinds of the rabbit holes and things that might happen that would now give you that experience to make you go and say, hey, wow, I'd like to watch that show even more because I was there and I was in it. And there was a number of other ones that were in there, but that was the one that kind of grabbed me the most.
Yeah, I would be worried if I went to a Westworld experiential advertising marketing campaign and something grabbed me. Because if I remember Westworld, you know, the robots kill people.
Well, maybe they did.
No, but that's really cool. And, you know, it kind of, if you think about it from an advertising perspective, it's the most effective ads are ones where the ad is kind of almost hidden, right? And what I mean by that is back in the early days of television, you would have the ads that were actually part of the program itself, right? You know, that's why I smoke Lucky Strikes, right? Or whatever. And then we get to the point where ads are things that are interrupting the flow of the experience, whether that's a TV show or a website or whatever, and the consumer goes and fights it, like me. That's why I have a pie hole. I don't want all the ads interrupting what I'm trying to do on the web. It's why I use TiVo for watching TV, because, you know, you get an hour-long show, and when you take all the ads out of it, it's 39 to 42 minutes, right? And so I can save, you know, 20 minutes of my life by using a TiVo each time I watch a TV show. If it's part of the experience, then you're enjoying the experience and getting the ad, not having the ad being something that breaks the experience for you. So that it all makes sense. And I actually think those are better ways of engaging your customers.
Sure. Sure. And you're breaking through the filters, such as what you put on around you, understandably, for all the right and good reasons, to say, pay attention to this, because this is now something special and different, and you're getting value from it too, as opposed to it consuming part of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So super cool.
Well, speaking of breaking through the filters.
Speaking of breaking through the filters, Wired is one of my favorite magazines too, and we've been talking about robots, we've been talking about AI. In this case, the machine learning that's going on here is not about playing games, it's about playing puns. And these robots or these AIs have been designed to go and figure out what would be punny. And funny thing about all this is that robots seem to be worse at doing puns than people.
Which means they must be really good puns, right? Because really, really bad puns are, by definition, really good.
Yep.
No, I looked at this and I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty funny. I have a love-hate relationship with puns.
Well, many people do. But, you know, we've seen robots try to do art. We've seen them try to write Shakespeare. We've seen, you know, music and composition and so forth. And maybe this will be getting better, too, over time. But I guess the fun thing about puns is the worse they are, the better they are, which is kind of an inverse value proposition about how you determine the quality of a pun.
Exactly.
So maybe this will be even better before too long. Okay, here was something. Gosh, when was this from? The Saturday Night Live example.
Oh yeah, this was mid April.
This was back in April too. Yeah. So talk through this a little bit, because this was kind of fun about what happens when you're playing a game that has robots in the game or non-player characters.
Well, the whole thing, and the reason I watched Saturday Night Live and I saw this and I just died. I laughed. I cried. And I was like, I hope someone has this skit available so that we can talk about it on the show. So we started off early on in the career of our podcasting around virtual reality and virtual worlds.
Yep.
And a lot of that is based off of gaming technology, and a lot of those games, and they still exist today, have the kind of starter mission where you're, hey, welcome to the game, blah, 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 blah. And they kind of walk you through, and they've got these really kind of transparent NPCs, non-player characters, walking through the setup. And so right. what they've done is they're kind of doing the Oculus Rift game. He's got the visor on. He's got the hand gestures. He's checking out the graphics, and it's walking him through getting started to kill off the zombie hordes that are attacking you. And you go into this whole bit where the non-player characters are getting way too engaged in what's going on to the detriment of the game itself. We'll leave it at that. We'll let people watch it. Enjoy.
Yeah, and just the bottom part of the article seemed to be that it was inspired by one of the online games called Tom Clancy's The Division 2. And that after this launched and was shown by Saturday Night Live, apparently there was a patch done, and now the non-player characters shout at the player less frequently than before, apparently. All right, so continuing the games and moving right back into AR, which is kind of looping to where we started, you saw that Isle of Pigs, AR version of Angry Birds, is out and about.
Well, it's funny because we had talked about on our last episode that this game was announced. We're really looking forward to it, blah, blah, blah. And I had immediately gone to the site and signed up for the, quote, pre-order on iTunes or on the App Store. Mm-hmm. And a couple of weeks ago, Monday morning comes around, I look at my phone, and I have Angry Birds Isle of Pigs on my phone. I'm like, uh-oh. And it's funny because I had been playing around with Swift Shot code from WWC last year, which basically is, you know, you've got slingshots and you're knocking down the other player's little fort. Well,
right.
The guys at Rovio have taken that as a basis, the best way I can describe it, and giving you Angry Birds, and it is awesome. It is awesome. I don't know how much you've played it yet. I know I immediately sent you the link to it.
I mean, you sent me the link, and it's like I was still on the go, and I didn't do anything about it.
So you got to play it, because the great thing about Angry Birds was the physics, right? That was kind of the start of it, and then they added, you know, different types of physics with the ice blocks and the, you know, the straw, and blah, 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 blah. Well, now you take that and you extend it to the third dimension, right? So now the puzzle is not just knocking down the thing and killing the pigs, which is the puzzle and always has been, but now you have to rotate around the square of real world that you place the board on to figure out, you know, what's the best angle and what's the best side of the angle to get the shot off for your little birds to hit the little TNT or knock out the one support beam or whatever. And it's Angry Birds, man. I love it. It's lots of fun.
Well, I'm definitely going to put it on and give it a go. So as we're winding down the time here, cause we're almost at time. You have been prolific in your writing around the event that happens here annually in Durham. And I know that you had a couple of comments that you want to make and share with this audience too about MoogFest.
Yeah, real quick. MoogFest is a yearly event. Moog as in Vogue.
Yes, not that, Moog as in
that Moog. Occurs in Durham now. Moog. It used to be up in Asheville, North Carolina. This year, there were two reasons I really wanted to go. I was really excited about. One was Martin Gore from Depeche Mode was going to be there, and he was getting the Moog Fest Annual Innovator Award. He, other than the very first Depeche Mode album, he wrote almost every song that Depeche Mode did until about 2005 when David Gahan started writing songs too. It's really cool to, you know, get really up close to Martin Gore, listen to hear kind of the history of how the band got going, etc. The second thing is Thomas Dolby. I'm a huge Thomas Dolby fan. He was going to perform. Unfortunately, the day he was supposed to be there, it was they announced he had been sick. He was in a hospital and he could not attend. So didn't get to see that. However, I got to listen to a gentleman by the name of Patrick Gleason. And he did a talk at a venue and a performance one night. The performance was fantastic. He merges jazz and electronics music. And as part of that, he used to work with Herbie Hancock back in the 70s. He's been around for like 50 years doing electronic music. And he actually gave the history talk of electronic music and synthesizers, which was fantastic. And not only was his talk really interesting, and all this is on my blog over at michaelrowe01.com, and we'll have a link to the show in the show notes to it, but the team from North Carolina State University that I think I talked about last year, they have kind of like a makerspace that they set up, actually had some of the same tech that we've been talking about on the show, including the hollow display, for lack of a better term, that actually creates three-dimensional holographic objects in a display. And I took some pictures of that, got to play with that some. Incredible session, highly recommend. Next year, Thomas Dolley is going to be back, so I'm looking forward to the 2020 Moog Fest.
That'll be super awesome. I know you always enjoy that, and I'm glad you got a chance to experience to the fullest, even though not everything happened the way you were expecting, right?
Like, yeah, it's
but that's
all good.
What it that's happens. What it shows about. Hey, so to wrap things up and to maybe close on a similar piece of this with the display was an example that happened at Microsoft just recently, and showing the example of using HoloLens 2. And from what you and I were chatting about, it was probably a recording that happened during the rehearsal as opposed to the real thing, because the real thing had some problems with it. But during the rehearsal, these two researchers from Microsoft, one researcher from Microsoft and one guy from the Apollo 11 history perspective, were showing the Saturn V rocket, showing what happened in 1969 using the full extent of augmented reality and having an augmented reality lens on the camera that was following them around on the stage as they were interacting with stuff that wasn't there, and being able to show and manipulate and move their hands around and break the rocket apart and see it land on the moon. I don't know. I was just like in awe of what was done there, and it bodes so much exciting possibilities for the future.
Yep. Awesome stuff. So really much. Cool.
Yep. All right. Well, with all that, I think that's the show for this time around. So thanks everyone for sticking with us through our April. We're glad to be back in the saddle, and we're looking forward to hearing from you and what you'd like to hear more about on gamesatwork.biz.
Woohoo!
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.